We're back with episode 814 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Washington Heights. I just couldn't resist coming back for another In Memoriam.
Oh, geez. I don't know where to really go from there except to say I'm never happy to have In Memoriams. And, well, at the same time, I want to appreciate what we've had.
There you go. Definitely can relate to that sentiment, especially with the news that we're going to be getting into in just a few moments. But yes, we have Edmund back in the fold for this week's episode. So welcome.
Thank you. Now, aside from the news that just hit, there's a whole bunch of stuff happening recently, which I just really wanted to get my two cents in on.
And you'll have your opportunity, that's for sure. Obviously, as we typically do on these moments where we have skipped a week, if you will, we're going to have our first episode full of kind of news and recent events and open discussion, and then we'll get into the episodic discussion in the following two episodes for this week. So, as we go in that episodic discussion, we'll probably get deeper into some shows because we have people who, such as Edmund, who have not really been around to weigh in yet, and then some who are catching up, like Gary on a couple shows, so... Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. But before we do any of that, let's see. At least on this one, I'll let Gary still do the disclaimer.
Oh, no, I insist Edmund do it. I've been carrying the workload long enough since that slacker left us. No, go ahead, Edmund.
For the opener of the week and the news segment, I just have to warn you that, if you haven't heard this news, you might be spoiled by it. But it's news. So you really need to be up on it anyway.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to be saying anything here that too many people are going to be, shocked by anyway. Hopefully not. If you're following some of these things, you probably already are well aware of it. All right, well, what we're going to talk about first of all is, unfortunately, we might as well lead with this, and it is the recent passing of Stephen First, who is known by us best as Vir Koto from Babylon 5. Unfortunately, he did pass just yesterday, or the day before, actually. When exactly was it? I guess it was just a couple days ago, but at the time of recording.
I believe it was the 16th of June.
Right, so a couple of days ago. So, yeah, it took everybody by surprise. Of course, there are many other people who know him from other films like Animal House and so forth. But Gary, any first words here?
Well, no. I'll be glad to jump in. And I've been reading what I would consider to be closer accounts, both from JMS, John Copeland, who else? Peter Jurasic, as Bruce Boxleitner, and they've all chimed in that while he was definitely, he's going to be missed. He was about 63, not extremely young, but by no means old in this day and age. And they commented, and it's an often retort you hear that people don't want to be mourned, but, want to be remembered fondly. And they definitely said that, he was definitely someone that brought joy, that was always a pleasure to be around, not just to work with, they felt that he was a friend that always made them feel good. And there aren't that many people like that in the world. So it's nice to hear this outpouring, not of gushing over the top, oh, he was the best person ever, just that he made everyone else feel good and nice and was very happy to be around him all the time. And his sons echoed similar sentiments as well, saying that, don't mourn him. Just let's appreciate what we had while we had it and, try and think of him fondly. So I made the mistake of trying to watch Sleeping in Light this morning. And you never start your day off well when you watch that episode of Babylon 5. A friend of mine suggested I should have watched, was it Sick Transit Veer, which would have might have been a little bit better choice. And I, in retrospect, I do agree it would have been, and I'll probably go and watch it tomorrow. It was nice to see him in what was his last performance for the show at the same time. And his speech, speaking about Londo and the Pac-Moran stuff was probably some of his more dramatic acting that he had in that role. So while it was sad at the same time, I enjoyed watching him perform. That was fun. It's sad, as I think about him, I've had the pleasant opportunity to meet and speak with him three different times, and I realize that's not a lot, but every time I ever talked to him, I always walked away, feeling happy, contented, and with a smile. He was always, very friendly, even when to share everyone's throwing out their Stephen First stories. And I have one or two, but my favorite one that I'll share that's sort of specifically about him was I ran into him in an elevator in Dragon Con. And at the time, I was helping out with the Babylon podcast that got us together. And I said, "Oh, Mr. First, thank you for show." I think it was about 6 or 7 months prior that he had done an interview with the show. I said, "Oh, thank you for doing that interview." And he goes, "Who?" And I say, "Oh, it was the Babylon podcast." And I mentioned that Jeffrey Willers was associated. And I said, "What?" I said, it's a podcast. It's like a radio show. They're out of Phoenix." And he goes, "Huh?" I wasn't getting anywhere at all, and I just said, "Oh, it was just an interview you did a few months ago, and I really enjoyed how you were on and telling about different things that happened on the set." He's like, "Oh, you liked it?" I said, "Yeah, I did." I said, and he says, "Oh, that's good." And that was one of my interchanges. So I was like, he was nice. We talked for a few minutes longer, and about what he was currently up to. He was directing a cable feature of some sort at the time. I don't recall the name of the show. And he said he was doing well, although I'm trying to think. I think he had a brace on his arm that time, and he always seemed somewhat on the frail side. Every time I saw him, he had a foot brace on or a wrist guard or something. It just seemed like he always seemed to have issues with his health. And sadly, I think it found out that he was diabetic, and I didn't realize that at the time. I didn't know that. And I don't know if that's the exact cause. I don't recall reading one way or the other, but probably, I'm sure, no doubt it contributed. So it's sad that we lose yet another main cast member out of the show. You see some shows, like Star Trek and the like, that will go, 30, 40 years and people are still here. But not this little show, unfortunately. So he's fun. I said he's fun. I don't want to say he lights up a room. He's definitely not the center of attention, but it's always nice to have him there. He sort of brings an ambiance to things he does that make it so much more enjoyable. And while we're focusing on the Babylon 5 part of him, he is of course better well known from Animal House, given the crazy popularity of that show. And also the other thing that I really first noticed him in, because I was too young to watch Animal House at the time, was from St. Elsewhere, when he played the doctor there. And that's where I first came upon Stephen First, and I enjoyed him a great deal in that role. And I wouldn't say, don't know if it's quite Veer-like, but it was that guy that was somewhat meek and unassuming, I guess a character trait if nothing else. And I liked him a lot in that show. And His body of work may not have be as extensive as some other actors, but many years ago he chose to start going behind the camera and doing directing. He directed, I believe it was 3 episodes of Babylon 5, as well as some other features. So he really had taken the move on from acting, which is why we're not used to seeing or hearing his name as much now as we previously did in the past.
Mm. True. Anything you want to add to that, Edmund? Tribute. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I did just want to mention that for me, being a little older than you guys, I was right in that adolescent sweet spot for Animal House when it came out. So that was certainly my first memory of him. And Peter Riegert is the two hapless pledges. And funnily enough, St. Elsewhere, I never really got into. So it wasn't until later I even realized that he was in that show. But I did want to touch on that just a little bit more. What Gary was saying about him shifting his career into directing and moving behind the camera. With actors of shall we say his physical type, he certainly made the realization that getting cast was probably going to get more difficult as he got older. I really like the fact that the producers and crew at Babylon have helped him get that start. I think it was really his major directing gigs, and really helped him learn that side of the business, and go on to make that his primary part of his career, doing directing work and producing work. And I was just looking it up, and it was 3 episodes of Babylon 5, including The Corps' Mother, The Corps' Father, by the way. They tended to give him those ones that were a little bit more outside of the continuity, and some interesting and sort of alternate takes. He also did do a couple of episodes of Crusade as well. So so JMS was certainly, and Doug Netter was certainly looking out for him and helping him on to that second part of his career. He certainly will be missed by us fans, and quite obviously by the cast and crew remember him very fond.
Yes, I think that pretty much covers it, and it's unfortunate that we have yet another loss from our beloved cast. So, all right, that was a little bit of a rough start to the week. Let's try to move on to something that's a little more positive, hopefully, or at least more energetic. So, yeah, Edmund, what you been up to lately, or what's on your mind?
I've been kind of a little wouldn't say bogged down at work, but a bit busy with work. I've still been able to keep up with some stuff. I have been following Attack on Titan this season 2. And enjoying that quite a bit, but I seem to recall you mentioning something about they're only doing this season 2 is only about 12 episodes.
That's right. In fact,
I haven't watched the 12th episode yet, but as they've been moving along, I have been a little bit more and more annoyed about yes, we're getting some interesting stuff. A bit of a sub of a season, what they have forced me to do is finally start delving into the manga. I'm just an issue or two in, but I'm so hungry for more story that I don't care if it spoils some of the stuff coming up in the series. I really need to find out what's going on.
Yes, I've mentioned this a couple times before, but the storyline that is currently running in season 2, or was running season 2, is volumes 9 through 12.
Okay.
So you have a little ways to go. You're kind of going back through material from the first season. It's very faithful, as you can already tell.
Yes, absolutely. Nice.
I do have good news, though. Even though it was only 12 episodes this season, they've already announced they're coming back for season 3 next year.
Okay, good.
So, yes, and what they have shown seems like it's at least 4 volumes forward from where they left off, so it could be a little bit more. So it's going to depend a lot on how they adapt things, but they do look like they're going to make some pretty steady progress.
So excellent.
It's good to see that. There's lots of theories out there that the reason that they did it this way was not just simply production limitations, but also that they could keep an annual schedule, and by the time that the final volumes come out for the manga would be around the time that they would be able to produce the final season. So It's all theory, but at least they did a really solid job with the story arc that they adapted for season 2. At least I feel that way.
Absolutely. That was part of the frustration was, getting 12 in and thinking, yes, I could easily have another 12 or 13 of these, please.
Yeah, it's a really good season. Well, alas, too short. But yeah, it is interesting when you read the manga because, yeah, if you get past where they are right now, you're going to see that the author really had to jump through some hoops to not give away some things during this particular phase of the story, which is why it seems so, in some respects, kind of vague and indistinct in terms of certain people's motivations. So it all makes sense.
Certainly. I mean, as far as these new shifters, just not to spoil too much, I think it was more the frustration of, this talk of background and hometowns, et cetera, and then realizing, but we're not going to get there, are we?
No, alas, you need to wait.
Yes.
All in good time. Yes. So you mentioned Attack on Titan, of course. Excellent. What else have you been up to?
Circling back to stuff from starting years ago, but I had gotten behind on the comic saga and have finally caught up to the current state of affairs, and still that book is still just kicking butt, and it's very interesting how they he's Brian K. Vaughan has managed to build this story that, you know, yes, is very personal, very focused, you know, on this family, but at the same time is slowly but surely managing to build in sort of the rest of this galactic world that he's placed it in. You know, of course, that as well, perhaps on a slightly more regular schedule than Attack on Titan has been, but still, you know, where it's getting doled out in those six issue segments. You know, just a looking forward to the next batch coming out.
Yeah, I'm a little bit behind myself, but that has been a pretty consistently strong series as far as I'm concerned. Gary, do you read Saga, or is that outside of your...
Yes. Oh, no, it does, but oh no, I don't read it on a monthly basis. I pick up trades when they get discounted. Okay. I'm only up to about the third trade at the moment, but gotcha. Yeah, no, it's good. It's good, solid writing. I won't say it's not that it's not my cup of tea, but I just don't feel the urge to get it on a monthly basis, so small bites.
Understood. I mean, they do kind of segment it out in such a way to allow for those trades to be very, very well paced. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Right, yeah, that's one where I could absolutely understand just waiting for the trade each time, because it's such a continuous story that you know, yeah, I think it can be a little frustrating just going issue to issue. Kind of like watching Lost the first time through.
Very true.
And we're at 25 yeah, minutes, 30 seconds.
There was 19 minutes, folks.
Yeah,
that's right. Just for those who are playing the home game. Yeah. All right. Let's see here. Now, Gary, how about you? What have you been up to lately?
Let's see. I'm still preparing for my big backpacking trip next week, and it has been overwhelming my life lately, so I do apologize for some of my lack of commentary on some of the shows. It's really been it's becoming more and more of a time suck as we get closer and closer, but that's inevitable, so I'm riding the wave at this point. Let's see, anything else I've done? For Father's Day, I actually got several geek t-shirts that I was somewhat proud of. My wife got me a Groot t-shirt that has the baby Groot, I guess you'd call him, young Groot, tiny mm-hmm. Groot, on the front, taking up most of the front chest. And then on the back, it actually has a little type of origin story about Groot, how he, you know, he fought and then he died and he's regrown from a twig and stuff like that. So it's kind of interesting to have a little storyline on the back of it. That's fun. She also got me some shirts. And I've seen these on Facebook, and I don't know if some of our viewers have seen it too. There's like two boxes, and one says... I think it's me, your wife, and it's just like a woman, like with, I believe, with a skirt outline. And then the other side, my wife, and it's like a silhouette of Wonder Woman. So she got me two of those. And what else? Some odd Disney World stuff and a DVD copy of La La Land, which I enjoy very, very much. So they said there's 3 hours of extra content. Now, given that the movie was only like 2:10, I'm sort of... That was a lot of extra content. Yeah, that's a lot of extra content. So I haven't had a chance to view it yet, but I was like, wait a minute, that's longer than the movie. That's crazy. But we'll see. We'll see what it entails. So that's fine. Also, my wife says, "Oh, did you ever read this this author?" And she had a hardbound book in her hand. She's like, "Oh yeah, I picked it up at a store. It was only $1." I said, "Oh, what was it?" "Oh, it's 3001 from Arthur C. Clarke." I said, "Oh yeah." I've read Clark, but actually I've never read 3001. I've read 2001, I've read 2010, but I never did read 3001. So that will be the next book up for me to browse through. So I was like, oh, either of you ever read it? Should I crack open the book? Is it worth it? Geez, you already told me, Edmund. Okay. It was the 32nd of them.
it is worth it in terms of being a completist. However, my biggest issue with it was that it's from that last part of Clark's life and career when he was really feeling an extreme need to explain things and wrap things up with nice tight little bows. It's got kind of similar to some of my reaction I had to that ongoing Rama saga that he was co-writing that, but you know, those sort of this, you know, this need to take a story that had some nice ambiguity and mystery to it and just stretch it out and you know, have all sorts of commentary in it. So
Yeah, I think it comes to mind more than anything.
Yeah. A lazy Sunday book instead of a intense Saturday morning book. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. I will say this: I liked that one better than I did 2061.
Oh yes, yes.
Abysmal. But anyway, yes. Let's see. Just kind of riffing off of that, I'm about halfway through Catalyst, the prequel to Rogue One. The prequel to A New Hope. The prequel to the prequel. I feel like there's going to be some...
And they say Star Wars doesn't involve time travel. Liars.
Right. Yeah, the prequel to the prequel that's not related to the prequels, though.
Right. You've got it down. You've got it surrounded. It's pretty good so far. It's kind of bogged down a little bit in the middle, but, you know, it's focused very much, as one would expect, on Galen and, you know, Orson and the kind of those characters that inform the story, because Jyn, of course, is a child at the time, so it definitely fills in some of the blanks, and it's a good story. I am really impressed by the fact that there are very small ways in which it intersects very nicely with Thrawn, which of course was written relatively at the same time. So, you know, nice little bit of extra continuity there, so I always enjoy that. Let's see. From there, I got to see Wonder Woman today, and I really enjoyed that. Definitely, I know that, Gary, you gave some comments last week, or last time that we recorded on the movie, and I have to echo a lot of them. I really liked some of the setting in World War One and the way that they played that out. That was really well done. I loved the stuff with Diana on... I can never say the word correctly.
Themyscira?
That's it. That's the one. I really liked that. I didn't mind what they did differently with her origin and or mythology, because I'm not as deep into the DC lore as perhaps you are. So it didn't bother me much at all. And I really liked her performance. I thought her performance was great. I thought that Chris Pine as Steve Trevor was really good as well. They did a nice lot of inversion with the whole love interest thing with him. And I just really liked the way that the character was written. You know, she was pretty much taking no crap from anybody type of attitude, and I really enjoyed the way that that played out. So, definitely a recommendation if you didn't already know that it was a movie that was highly recommended. Now you've heard yet another recommendation.
Yay!
Yes, and unfortunately, I'm seeing it tomorrow, so you won't get my recommendation until then in the future.
Just give it now, Edmund. I'm telling you. Just give it now. You'll be fine. I'm trusting. I got your back. You're going to be good. I promise.
Okay.
Yes. Definitely the exception to the current rule when it comes to the DC films. Let's put it that way. That literally...
Well, because she was allowed to smile. Is that why?
Yeah, that was part
of it. Yeah. That was amazing. Yeah, that was wow. What a stretch for these characters. Yeah. I
know. Mm. And her mother was not named Martha?
No. No.
No,
it may have been her middle name, but we're not quite sure. But yeah, about 20 minutes into the movie, my son turned to me and said, "Oh my God, this is not Batman versus Superman at all, is it?"
So that says it Thank all. God. Yeah. I'm sorry. Wait, oh, did I say that out loud? Oh, geez.
Yes.
Inside voice.
Get your card revoked.
Oh, no. Why?
But yes, that was a good one. Also, finally saw a little movie that came out a few months ago called Life. It's the movie that is basically horror in space, right? Where they
It wasn't based on the board game.
Surprise! I was a little surprised by that, but you know, it was about what you would expect. A lot of people who are supposedly highly trained scientists and mission specialists making incredibly stupid decisions.
Oh boy.
Yes.
So was it like an alien wannabe or not even that?
It was essentially that. I mean, if you want a few spoilers, it's not all that surprising when it's right in the first few minutes of the film, but it's essentially life that's found on Mars. And you eventually find out essentially that Mars used to probably have a lot more life.
Hasn't Doctor Who done that like 5 times?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Just checking. Yeah.
Including just last week, but anyway.
Yes.
There goes my crossover. Oh,
you're not wrong. Yeah. So it was kind of very predictable how things were going to go. The ending was probably the best part for me because it went a little bit unconventional, but at the same time, most of the movie played out exactly the way that you would expect it to. So, let's see. That means that I'm caught up. You guys are caught up. We have a little bit of time to get into some recent events. And I know, Edmund, that you had some opinions about this. And I had already given mine, which probably are a little bit different than yours. But the news of Sensate and its cancellation. And yeah, I'm going to give you the floor for a few minutes to kind of give your opinion on this.
Okay, well, I mean, I was very disappointed. I know we're not really getting into episodic stuff yet, but I have watched all the way through, I am not one of these people who are on, you know, militantly on the battlements, decrying Netflix and demanding that they renew it and bring it back. But I have been rather heartened at the size and tenacity strength and vigor of the protest, certainly is a sign of how much this series has managed to touch its audience, really I think give a show that was so vigorously and militantly diverse in its setting, in its characters, in its identities, whether sexual or national, that obviously it really touched a lot of people who do not feel represented in our entertainment culture, certainly the way in which it was has been ushered off the stage really hit a lot of nerves, applaud the energy of the protests, even though unfortunately it looks like it's not going to go anywhere. With Netflix being a bit of an anomaly in terms of rights holders, being the very much non-traditional network. Much as I would love to see them release it to some other form of graphic novel would make them certainly make the most sense or try and give the audience some sort of closure. I am not expecting that to happen anytime soon. But all that said, I mean, I know we'll get into, you know, I'll probably get more into the actual nuts and bolts of the season later in the week. But I do feel that this isn't just Netflix's fault. One of the big differences between season one and season two was JMS taking a step back, letting. I mean, it's their property, shared property. But Lana Wachowski did take a more of a lead role in this season, and while that certainly did give the season, I mean, some extraordinary cinematic scope and imagery and impact, I do feel that has probably wound up working against them, both in terms of this infamous $9 million per episode, which I mean I noticed early on. I mean, the number of scenes where different members of the cluster were talking to each other, and you were cutting back and forth with both actors in both locations, halfway around the world from each other in a lot of instances, it sort of became immediately apparent just, how much money was being spent on the, and yes, it did help, obviously, create the sense of connection, exactly how it felt being in this sort of new living situation, I think the combination of that and not having JMS around sort of helping drive the story and make sure that in addition to all the background we were getting into the characters and the way their relationships were developing, a lot of that was happening at the expense of driving the plot forward. The cliffhanger that it ended on, part of my issue in the end was that felt like something that could have been happening much earlier in the season, and the season could have been concluding, been brought to more of a natural conclusion, which I think certainly, even if this was going to be it, might have blunted some of the vociferous reaction, since it really felt like we were just getting to the point of, the cluster cluster. I mean, well, since the cluster is literally coming together, as we make it into like later in the week, they have it all cut short then. And I think that's something that could have been brought forward a bit. If JMS had more of a hand in shaping the season the way he did in season one.
Well, Edmund, you know, $9 million an episode, then you multiply that by a season, that is a significant investment. And, well, I feel that to some extent during the various protests and stuff, that amount has sort of been almost dismissed as a valid argument. But that's a lot of money per episode for any show. I mean, that's just incredible. I'm surprised they, greenlit it in the first place for that kind of budget. And more importantly, the ratings just aren't there from what I hear. You know, this in a sense is a cult show to some extent. And you might not agree with the cancellation, it seems to be reasonable to me.
Well, I mean, the $9 million for this season. I mean, part of the arguments in terms of why it shouldn't necessarily have played into the decision to renew or cancel is that from what we've been hearing anyway, and of course, it has, the actual amount of information you get is minimal, and you've got to try and figure out how much, what parts of it are accurate, is the producers were saying that they could, that was sort of an outlier for this season. Now that the story was being brought, being brought into fewer locations, and with the cast itself actually being brought together, that the potential third season wasn't going to rack up anything close to those sorts of numbers. And that was something that was being conveyed to Netflix by the producers, and as they were, starting to plan out the potential season three, so certainly, this season did cost a lot, but that money is already spent. It's already up there on screen. It's a reason why, there are parts of this season, which look absolutely incredible. This wasn't a case of them saying, and we have to keep spending this for the, for the rest of the time. I think a bit of a sort of a false marker in terms of why it didn't get renewed.
Well, that makes more sense than anything I've heard. So.
Yeah, to a degree, I'm sure. The difficulty becomes the fact that what it looked like to me, and I don't know whether or not this is valid or not, but it certainly looks this way, is that somebody finally realized just how much money Netflix is losing and chose to look at the ever unpopular budget versus viewership numbers, which is a very rough way of looking at return on investment. And unfortunately, I have a feeling that even the CEO of Netflix was being very cagey in the way he was putting it. I have a feeling that there's a board of directors that basically said, if it's below this number, cut it. And so regardless of the prestige that a show like that can bring because of its diversity and inclusivity and so forth, it's just a matter of, as Gary was saying, maybe even if they were saying, hey, next season it is going to be so much cheaper, I'm sure all they did was look at the budget for season two and look at the viewership. And future plans didn't play into it, because it really felt like, oh yeah, this, they pretty much came out and said, we've got to see if big risk stuff is going to pan out. And that it did not surprise me after they made that statement that a day later Sense8 was canceled. The other thing that I kind of brought up last time too, is that Sense8 was a show that barely got a second season. I remember that it was kind of, people were on their, we're kind of on the edge of their seat about it. So it doesn't surprise me only from that perspective. I think it really comes down to, Edmund, like you said, people shouldn't be upset at Netflix that the show, that the season ended on a huge cliffhanger or any of that. That's a creative decision. And they could have easily made a decision to bring the season to a more fitting conclusion, because in the day of binge watching, you don't need a cliffhanger at the end of your season to bring people back.
Right.
So that was a decision that they made, and they rolled the dice and they lost. It just seems very disingenuous for them to blame Netflix for that. And nor does it make a whole lot of sense to me for them to keep saying that Netflix should bring it back for a 2-hour this or that or the other thing. It's like, well, again, they're not going to do it for creative reasons. They're going to do it if it makes sense financially. And it sounds like it doesn't from their point of view. So it's kind of, as much as I sympathize with anyone who wants to get their favorite show back on the air, it's one of those situations where the information that's out there really kind of plays against that whole idea. Especially for Sense8, unfortunately. We actually probably won't be talking about it in the next couple episodes because I've only watched the first couple episodes of the season.
Okay.
And I really wasn't that taken with it. It still felt like to me that it was playing that game of pushing the boundaries even when it didn't make sense within the story. That it was just, hey, let's throw in a scene of this just because we can. I think that, you know, last time I was saying that it's not pandering because of the people behind it. It wouldn't make sense for it to be pandering. But at the same time, it's one of those things where they're intentionally winking at the screen and going, look at how far out we're going. It's not as artful as they think it is sometimes. I think it just comes across as crass occasionally, which it would be even if it were, you know, standard or more familiar territory. It's one of those things where it's like, why do we need, a gratuitous sex scene right here? It's completely unnecessary in the context of how the episode is even flowing. And I felt that way with the Christmas special, especially, but then when it came back, it was a little bit better, but it just isn't grabbing me in those first couple episodes. And maybe, as you say, that has something more to do with the people in the writer's room this season versus anything else. But we'll see if I wind up catching up with it, because there are quite a few other things, unfortunately, on my list, and this one now, especially knowing that it's been canceled with a cliffhanger, it's kind of hard to generate the interest to go and delve into it, as you can probably imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I mean, what I will certainly do now that I have actually realized where Sense8 is on our score sheets, yeah. I hadn't quite caught up to the streaming shows spreadsheet, but I will. Although this is one thing I will say in general. I mean, I have been finding it a little bit trickier on these shows, like Sense8 and like 12 Monkeys, which, you know, yes, is not on a streaming service, but Sci-Fi did that little stunt of rolling it all out at once, so the people would wind up binge watching it. Yes. but it's always like, you know, having to go in then, and it's like I've got to go and find a recap to remember, okay, what was it that happened in that episode that I was reacting to. It really does wind up being the situation where, you know, yes, it's sort of the story, you know, the individual episodes, you know, kind of just blur into one big long story. Although I do remember from the, I mean, in terms of the episodes you have seen, John, I mean, that whole little sequence at the end of, I think, well, I mean, the, yes, the second episode, the first episode back, when everything does come together to finally track down Whispers, that did kind of grab me and make me think, you know, okay, they are not just the cluster itself, but the writers are starting to get a better handle on bringing these people together, you know, and showing, you know, just, you know, what the potential power of all these disparate elements being able to attack something from all these different angles can be.
Yeah, I do remember that from the episode, and it was pretty good from there. And that actually struck me as something that JMS would have brought to the table.
Yes,
in particular.
Definitely.
So, yeah. So, I mean, just as a general note, again, for those who, you know, because I know I probably should have mentioned it before, but just getting a little bit behind on a couple things. But any of these shows that are quote unquote streaming or binge-worthy or whatever you have it, where it's all been dumped in relatively short period of time, it just doesn't lend itself very well to a weekly analysis anymore. And that's because we're all on different schedules of when we actually get to it. So, yeah, we kind of capture it when we have time and when we have the interest and where it fits into the schedule. So, just programming note, and also just for Edmund, just in case, because it was something that was kind of a decision that was made as I was looking at the 12 Monkeys situation and went, there's no way this is going to work out, because once I start watching it, I'm going to want to keep going.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the way it worked for me. I mean, I have seen it all the way through to the end.
So there you go. Yeah. All right, well, what we're going to go ahead and do is wrap up this particular episode, and we'll come back next time with the first of 2 weeks, or two episodes, rather, worth of episodic discussions. So, until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.